It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
4 o'clock hours here. Reno's in. This hour is brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers. 766-1400 is the number. You got to dial 775 in the north. And they've got offices in the Vegas area, in Summerlin, downtown Vegas, and in Henderson. Before we get to the Big Four, and a convo later on with one of the UNLV football players, I'll explain what Caleb Herring was saying at the end of the hour. UNLV made road trips to Houston, H-Town, and Kansas City. And so we decided to have a little Texas versus KC barbecue showdown, and he enjoyed his barbecue a lot more in Kansas City than he did in Texas. I enjoyed the barbecue this time around in Texas more than Kansas City. One of our friends with UNLV enjoyed the barbecue in Texas more than Kansas City. So sometimes it's where you go, mm-hmm. when you go,
what you eat,
and what you order. So the one person at UNLV, brisket at a place in Houston, was better than the place in Kansas City. So my ribs, I wanted ribs. Mine were better.
That's what I'm thinking about.
At Ray's Barbecue Shack, slightly better than Gates in Kansas City. And then Matt Nevert, play-by-play voice, and Caleb Herring, color analyst, they went to a place called Jack Stack, and they got brisket. They also got pulled pork with mac and cheese. So I think what put it over the top for them was what they ordered.
Yeah.
That place is very good. But they sent me a picture of the brisket mac and cheese, and I'll tweet that out because we have our UNLV Broadcaster Bites podcast up at Steve Cofield. The picture really was mouthwatering. It was a thing of beauty. I don't want to start crying, but it was good. I didn't have it. Does the picture look good?
Yeah. It definitely depends on what you eat. I'm a rib girl, so wherever the ribs are, I'm definitely going. I have never been to Houston, and I've never been to Kansas City, so... You know, I have high expectations for both places, to be honest with you.
I'll say they're both good. And they both like to rip on each other, just like Memphis doesn't want to give credit to Texas or Kansas City or Carolinas. I've had the Carolinas barbecue. It's different. The sauce is much different. I like that, too. I'm very equal opportunity when it comes to eating.
Are you like a sweet barbecue type of guy or like a salty barbecue type of guy?
I don't mind any of them. I actually... The place, Gates, had a little more zest to it, a little more spice. I kind of like that. But the ribs just weren't as good. They were very good. Both places were fall off the bone. And actually, I can go on and on with this. We've introduced something unique to Broadcaster Bites. And to me, we've introduced Tupperware Tales, because I bring Tupperware on the road, and I will bring stuff home. I overorder, and then I bring stuff home. Now the
Are you carrying your Tupperware in your bag at the restaurant and putting your food in there?
Absolutely. Yes. I have no issue with that at all. Yeah.
You're one of those.
Texas, I brought a couple of ribs. I got a piece of fry. Listen, I grew up in the Depression, okay? Not really, but I'm a man of the streets. They had a giant thing of fried chicken at the Houston Stadium, and I was like, I was so full I couldn't eat it. I'm like, that's going in the Tupperware. And I had it like Tuesday after
the
game.
Love
the energy. Air fried. Let's go.
Love the energy.
Let's go.
Hey, you pay for it. Take it home.
You know, that's the thing.
Take it home. I will even stick it in an napkin and put it in my purse. Now, I know that's a little hood, but I like to eat, so I'm not doing it.
I'm not going to say I haven't done it. I think there's a lot of outrageous cases of me grabbing something because I'm... The other thing is I don't like to see food wasted.
Same.
It drives me nuts. And then... Over the course of my life, I've met a bunch of people who are not leftover people. You'll go to a restaurant, they eat half the plate. There's plenty of good food left, and they're like, no, I'm done. I'm like, what do you mean you're done? Like, $22 for that dish. Take it home, air fry it, bake it. What are we going to do to repurpose it?
I'm the same exact way. Are you the type of person that cannot go out to eat with people who little nibble at their plate?
I don't pay attention that closely. My point is, I'm shocked at the end when they have most of the plate left and then they don't take it.
And then they don't take it. Like, what a waste of money. I'm taking my food. I will go to a restaurant. It could be a five. I don't even care for 5-star restaurants, okay? But if I do go to one, you best believe I'm going to take my food home if there's enough on the plate. But typically, I'm going to clear it.
I like that attitude. I like it. And sometimes I don't want to clear it. I'm going to take it on. I don't want to overeat. All right, Big Four time.
Battleborn Injury Lawyers presents the Big Four at Four. Number four.
Shannon Sharp in the news last week. I would say for all the wrong reasons. Frankly, I don't care if he's caught stooping, doinking, and you know making the noises on Instagram Live. He tried to deny it as a hack. Then he's owned up to it. Now he's really embraced it. I think what he's doing is basically what Kim Kardashian and Paris Hilton did back in the day. Now, those were visual, what they did. This was not visual, but I guess the sound of him going at it. He's now.
Sound was very visual.
Is he?
I listened to the whole video.
You did?
More than once.
I here's my thing. When I heard like 5 seconds of it, then I pictured Shannon Sharp, and I'm like, I can't. That's a man. Even hearing the sounds. Is he merchandising this?
He's merchandising it.
How?
He's now
What's
making
he doing?
Michelle merchandise. As well as, I believe on Nightcap, the first day that this happened, they're usually live. They had over 300,000 views that specific day. When I checked yesterday, I want to say it was up to 800,000. It could be close to 1 million, right? People are nosy. They want to know what was going on. They want to know if it was staged. In my personal opinion, right, from doing my research, I don't even know how to get on live myself. It takes 4 different steps to get on live.
We can barely get on live on Cofield and Company.
We're not
on again today. Okay, we're on today, but the stupid code and everything. Like,
it takes.
And I love that
steps.
He was like, "Oh, it was a mistake."
How is it a mistake when it takes 4 steps to get on live? Unless this Michelle girl set it up, right?
He's very talented. While did you ever see the Costanza episode where George has a sandwich that he loves so much that while he's going at it, he's eating? I think it was a pastrami sandwich.
Hey, it's
that's only 2 things.
Marketing,
you're right.
I guess, right?
Sure.
Form of marketing. Even though Shannon Sharp didn't need that, I'm not sick. In my personal opinion, it's too many steps to get on the Instagram Live, so it seems like it would be staged. The first day on Nightcap, you come out with, I believe it was condoms that you were sponsoring, and then
really?
You have Michelle merchandise. So immediately he's jumping on it. In my personal opinion, I would have threw that under the rug. But hey,
also, isn't it different?
You're gonna do what you're gonna
do. No, I was actually going to say, is it different with males and females? There are some females who are all about it.
That's true.
Did I say anything out of turn, by the way, on Kim Kardashian and Paris Hilton? Do we not all believe that they were part of the work?
They're part of the work.
Right.
Kim Kardashian's now a billionaire because it all started off one tape. Wow. If it were that easy.
The momager.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sicken you if she was actually involved in it?
The momager?
Yeah, her mom. They call her the momager. Manager.
I don't know.
That she was like, okay, Kim, this is the best thing for her career, so.
That would be sad.
She's like, cut that. I hope she wasn't in the room like, Ray J, come on.
Yeah.
Move. This is better. Okay, I don't know. Number three.
Number three.
John Gruden. I saw an alert real quick on Twitter that, hey, Gruden might have interest in the Florida job. Mm-hmm. I think John Gruden should be coaching somewhere, but I do understand if people are like, hey, what he did was unforgivable. I don't agree with that. What do you think?
I do believe that everybody deserves a second chance. I'm not saying that John Gruden doesn't hold talents because he does, right? I think that the language that he used as far as anti-gay, his slurs or whatever it was in regards to Roger Goodell and also his racism comments, it's very tough for anyone to ever forgive that.
Anti-female too.
And anti-female as well. But I do believe that separates from what you can do. And I do believe that separates from your talent. Now, I don't agree with anything that he has said. I do believe in forgiveness. I don't think that his respect will be the same when it comes to players. It could be black players. It could be players that are gay that have not come out. I don't think he'll get that same respect factor, which is why he's not going to come back to the NFL. He's now resorting to college football. And people are going to see his talents and he'll eventually get a job.
Number two.
Number two.
You sent over a story. I hadn't seen this. CJ Stroud at the end of the game giving a little pep talk to Caleb Williams. You said Caleb's awkward reaction to Stroud. Play this.
Hey, stop taking those hits.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, yeah. Learn from those mistakes, and everything that you got, bro, is in you already, bro. You're going to be a hell of a player in this league.
Yeah. All right, boy.
I wouldn't have stayed there for more than 2 seconds. I thought Caleb's reaction was not awkward. It was absolutely proper at the time. I just lost a game.
Yeah.
You are 1 year in the NFL. Don't give me advice. Nice thought, CJ, but I don't need advice from you, okay?
I looked at it the other way. Yes, it is annoying because you've lost the game, right? You're not playing up to par of what people think you should. Bears fans, including Griffin, are frustrated and they want to win. I get that. Maybe CJ Stroud shouldn't have done it at that specific time. But I do believe that it was nice for him to say, hey, just keep on going and push. No matter what, advice is good. His advice was really great. What he did, which he's a man of faith, he's going to react to it a little bit differently.
Humble yourself. Humble yourself. 1 year in the league, but that year he went to the playoffs. That year he had success. I don't care how long you've been in. If you have success in this league, in the NFL, you are somebody that every rookie should want to listen to.
Wow.
I'm gonna get on my boy's head right now.
This is coming from a Bears fan, everybody.
That's my quarterback. That's my quarterback. But I will tell you right now, you need to humble yourself, kid. You need to listen to somebody who's had success and knows what it's like to get the beatings that you get in this league.
I like that. Mic drop.
I think you have to be real careful and kind of pick the right situation to be giving advice to someone on a craft that you're both in. I think it's the timing of it. After a loss, I really don't need a pep talk from you.
I do agree with the timing because it could have been a simple message afterwards. But if you were to actually see the video, Caleb Williams is like, he's trying to get away.
I get you're a competitor. You don't want to be sitting there having to get the pep talk from a vet. But who better? A guy who's only, like you said.
A guy who's been in the league one year.
1 year.
And surprised everyone with a good year, and the team was a surprise.
And who also
He's got so much equity, Griffin.
But his experience.
Thanks for the lecture, CJ.
His experience as a rookie, he's been a rookie earlier, and he's been more recently a rookie than guys like Matt Ryan or guys like Peyton Manning, guys like Tom Brady. Any old vet in the league can give advice, but they don't really remember what it was like to be a rookie as well as a guy who's just a year removed from it. So I think that guy should have taken that advice.
I also think CJ Stroud had it a lot more harder. He was going in an entirely new system, entirely new organization with a new head coach and still was able to make it to the playoffs. I'm not saying that Caleb Williams is in a different position. Like, it's still tough, right? But if anyone is to hear it from, it's CJ Stroud.
Number one.
Number one.
I got ganged up on there. I lose that battle. I still think I'm right.
We're gonna box in that.
All right. I don't want to call this a battle because it's a man's future and his decisions to come on his career. So Tua's on injured reserve. Everyone has an opinion on this without being in Tua's situation. I suppose you can say, hey, if I had 3 concussions in a short period of time, this is what I would do. You can do that. So what would you do? Would you try to come back this year? Are you really thinking about retirement if you're Tua? What do you do, Nye?
I would keep playing. I would. Simple as that. It's the game of football. It's the only and the main thing that typically these young men are playing since the age of 5 years old, right? Most men don't have a plan B. He loves the game. He's passionate about the game. He's going to come back. I don't see him retiring anytime soon. People are definitely allowed to have their opinions because it's sad. He could paralyze himself, but I believe that he's going to keep on going.
Well, I mean, the other thing, he could be doing permanent damage to his brain, and if there was a way to, scan and see damage, that would be really scary level. But again, I'm not going to dismiss this, but guy's been playing football for a long time, and some do come out really bad on the other end. But I wonder what Troy Aikman would say, because Troy had to retire, but at like 32 after 10 concussions.
Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Threw up a nice little slide of rat poison. Because all those great things that you hear and you read, it softens your character. It softens your ability to stay on the course and to stay hungry. And certainly what we need to do to become the team that we want to be is we've got to push. There cannot be a cruise control. There will not be, because we're not anywhere close to where we need to be.
Well, we know Adam Hill loves that. We know Caleb Herring loves that poison thing. I like it too, but we take it too far in Cofield and Company. We've had multiple hosts where we end the show and they're like, that was a great show. And I'm like, meh. Don't let the poison get in your head. There were things we still need to work on. Okay, we have an issue. We're going to get to a little more on Tua. And I had heard about a Stephen A. Smith and L. Duncan discussion back to like Friday, and I hadn't seen it. Seeing it is different than hearing it relayed, so we'll get to that inside of 2 minutes. Nye is here. Nye Zaragoza, Griffin, Cofield, Finley Toyota Studios. I use this phrase all the time to talk about being of the streets. Now, we had a discussion, right? And I'm really not I said man of the streets. Man on the street is different. You guys think man of the street means a man-ho? Is that what you think?
I don't think I know.
Where are you getting this from? Is that a Cal Poly thing?
Oh, it's like a
Salt Lake, Utah
Urban
thing?
Dictionary.
First of all, definitely not a Salt Lake City thing. It's just this generation thing. You say I'm in these streets, that means you're not being very loyal. You're not being probably very clean.
Oh, wow, I never heard that before.
Yeah.
I looked up man in the street, but that just meant an average or ordinary person. That's kind of the way I'm doing it.
He, she, we are in these streets. There's so many different ways to say it. But yeah, basically when you hear something like that, people automatically assume, oh, a hoe. A hoe.
Yeah. Anything in regards to the streets.
Okay, Urban Dictionary, man of the street, a gangster, tough nut, a man who knows the street code. Don't mess with him. He's a man of the street. I think I combined street and then what I really meant was maybe man of the people. The common man.
Well, then you have to clarify it as man of the people. Because when you say man of the streets, right, when you imagine a street, there's a lot of traffic. There's lights, green, yellow, red. When you're comparing that to a man, men really like deep. To go, 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 go.
Yeah, you guys broke right into it in the break. I'm like, I'd never heard that before. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, we're just trying to inform you that if you say that, maybe anywhere but this studio right here, people might defer it as something different.
We speak to listeners who are like 30 and under, and we speak to listeners who are 50 and over. We speak to the ones in the middle, too. Well, but I will clean it up.
Listeners, if you win the streets, you will help.
I mean, Griffin's on it with you, so okay.
I was crying.
All right.
Started big four. I couldn't hold it in. It was so funny.
So we were talking about Tua. Everyone's got an opinion on Tua. I don't know his medicals. I would keep playing unless they told me, like you're like halfway to being, you know, really in trouble when you're like 40. Your brain is jacked.
Agreed.
I don't think they're going to tell him that. I think he'll get cleared. Now, I don't mean to be flippant, and I'm not trying to be like, back in my day, guys would have 8, 10, 12 concussions and keep trucking on. They'd be men of the – no. They fought through it. Now, that wasn't smart, and I'm sure people who've had 8, 10, 12 concussions playing football feel the effect at some point later in their life. You played at Utah and Cal Poly and JUCO. I mean, what was your attitude when you played? I would think they'd – you get 6 concussions, you're still going.
This is hard because I was a player who, after tearing my ACL about 2 to 3 times, was still with the mindset of I'm finishing every bit of eligibility I have. Right. You know, an ACL, a knee compared to a concussion, it's very different. There's a lot of different factors in which ones, you know, really the long-term effects. But if I'm Tua, you have to block out all the outside noise and have to really sit down with yourself and ask, is this worth it? Is it worth it? Obviously, you got the financial side of things he's got to consider, but at the end of the day, it's your body. It's the sport you love. You got to decide your priorities and what's more important.
Can we just talk about the play, okay? Because that's what annoyed me, first of all, because he could have avoided it, right? It's old news now, kind of, not really. But he could have avoided it by rushing and running into DeMar Hamlin.
Slide.
Just go down.
That's what they want you to do anyway. Slide.
Go down.
You're not going for extra yardage at that point. It's like, just slide.
So I think it's just,
you're not less than a man because
smarter,
you slide.
Right. Be smarter in the game. And I don't know, if you have to wear a guardian cap, wear that as well. I mean,
right?
If that's going to
help you. Wear the biggest
you.
Guardian cap that's legal. I saw someone over the weekend. I don't know if it was a tight end. His head and helmet were gigantic. And I looked at him like, okay, that's odd looking. But if it protects him.
If it protects you. Because you still want to think long term, right? This game is here for a moment. And then it passes away. But if it's that meaningful to you, do everything to protect yourself. That play frustrated me because it's like you set yourself up for that concussion. Now you have the whole world trying to decide whether or not you should retire.
Of all people in this league, why was Tua Tagovailoa not wearing a Guardian cap? I'm sure a million people across the globe have said that and put it on their shows and brought it up as a topic. I'm not trying to be interesting or different. I'm genuinely curious. Why was that the one player who was not wearing a Guardian cap after the rule?
I think a lot of it's the standard that's been instilled over the years in tough guy sports, that you're less than a tough guy if you're wearing a Guardian cap. Who cares? Who's judging people like that anymore?
People just want to see you win.
We'll see you play.
And they want
to see
you last for an entire season.
Right. So there was a great exchange on First Take. Stephen A. went kind of blathering on about something and making sacrifices. And then Elle Duncan's sitting there, and she decides to chime in. And I thought the way she chimed in, one, was completely disarming to Stephen A., you know, with her talk of sacrifices.
Listen, as someone who is a woman who has two scars that go from hip to hip because I've had two C-sections in an effort to provide for my family and create a family for my family, I understand sacrifice. A black woman in this country whose mortality rates are incredibly high, I understand making sacrifices and trying to mitigate risk when it comes to your family, expanding your family, and protecting your family. All I am simply imploring is that anyone in Tua's corner, someone that truly believes and loves Tua, is having a real conversation with him right now about what quality of life looks like.
What do you think? Did she hit the mark there? Is she off base?
I think she was off base in trying to compare the similarities. She has every right? Like, and I want to give everybody a perspective, because it was a lot of men that were frustrated in regards to what she said, right? She's allowed to have her opinion. This is the perspective with it. Women as a whole do sacrifice, and they sacrifice by having children. But that comparison right there has nothing to do with the game of football. I think she set that at the wrong time. I understand. I've never had a child before, but I could imagine with a C-section, you know, there are things that can take place where your C-section goes wrong and your baby passes away or you pass away. I get that. But as far as the similarities in regards to the game of football, I think that's where she went wrong, because it didn't make sense with the idea of Tua experiencing so many concussions.
Can I tell you that when we had a discussion, it was four guys, we talked about this on Friday, it's basically what we said, but then I also said, I ain't talking about it. I'm like, you start wading into female issues like that, I was like, that is dangerous ground. I'm not saying you're right, but it's interesting that you have that perspective. Give me the second part.
And all of us at some point have got to make a turn from the thing that we were defined for our entire lives. If we are surrounded by people that love us and can help us get to the conclusion that there is life after this, I'm just hoping someone, it ain't me. Yeah. I got no dog in this fight, and I am not audacious enough to ask him. I'm hoping someone in that family, someone in his corner that truly loves him, is asking him to sit down and think long and hard about whether he wants to keep doing this.
And maybe on the first comment, we need to hear more from Elle Duncan, because I was kind of with you where I was like, I don't know if concussion and life-threatening stuff down the road, weighing that against playing football, is the same as the decision on a C-section. But I also haven't had kids. I don't know the dangers of it. I know the long-term effects of it. You know, we all try to, you know, when you do talk radio, you do try to tie things sometimes to situations you've been in.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you miss the mark.
It was just frustrating for a lot of men, because you guys don't understand that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not in a women's body.
Right.
So that's why I'm understanding both sides of it. Like, I get what you were talking about, because you as a woman have to sacrifice. But it was just the wrong time to say that, because it had nothing to do with Tua and his concussion. Is it right that he talks to his family members? Yes. I love what Griffin said. It's more of Tua needing to sit down with himself, because your family members are not going to change your mind. You need to sit down with yourself in your own thoughts and in your own prayers to decide what is best for you and your life.
It took literally my head coach, my defensive coordinator, and my D-line coach to sit me down after the medical team told me, you should probably medically retire. If anything goes wrong, we're going to have to helicopter you out of here, and you're probably going to lose that leg. And I still said, no, I'm playing. And it took all those coaches to sit me down and tell me, listen, Think about the long term. Think about the kids you want to play with in the future. Think about walking your daughter down the aisle. Think about so many different factors. So, you know, yeah, everybody can say and give their opinions, but at the end of the day, that man's got to make that decision on his own.
And a decision that had to be made closer to home was Doug Brumfield last year and into this offseason, and he medically retired, and, you know, he had some of those issues. It was just over, and I think that's the other thing, the risk of concussion. Like, having six over 15 years is different than having six, and he's not at six, but six over freaking 3 or 4 years, at least from what we hear. I'm not Doc Cofield, right?
Yeah.
Make sure you get out to Ellis Island. Family-owned gem, offering everything you need in Las Vegas. Eat, drink, sing, sleep, play, all within walking distance of the Strip. Oktoberfest is on the way. They're going to start it off September 21st in the Front Yard. Live band, special menu, beer specials, and a Stein holding contest at 7 o'clock on the 21st with a $100 cash prize.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
We'll get into Mountain West Conference survival, defections, what the Pac-2/6-Pac wants now when it comes to both Nevada and UNLV, and also New Mexico. I think New Mexico has tons of potential. It's been a winning school on the basketball side. It had a pretty good run, at least as a 500 program that would make bowl games under Rocky Long. I like Albuquerque. I think their fans are the best, most voracious in all the Mountain West. So we're going to talk to Jeff Grammer from the Albuquerque Journal in just a couple of minutes. So now you're being looped in on this very late, but we have an entry in Circa Million. Put $1,000 up to make 5 picks a week. Massive prizes available. Quarterly prizes, other prizes, cash prizes available during the season, end of the season prize as well. And it's basically pick 5 games against the spread, and they keep the standings. We got out of the gates in week 1 pretty good. And the way I designed this was we were going to rank everyone in terms of pick ability.
Mm-hmm.
You got the shaft on this one. I had you 7th. We make 5 picks a week. So the first 5 people have abilities to move up and down in the rankings.
Okay.
And as soon as 5 loses, then 6 moves up, and then 7 will move up. So we basically have alternates. If we're not winning, other people get a chance.
I like that.
So we're 4-1 week 1. Last week we were not that good. We were 2-3. Griffin, you had a winner, so you actually move up. So our current rankings right now are these 5 people make picks. I'm actually in the number 1 spot. I actually started at number 4, but I've gone – weirdly, I've made 3 picks in 2 weeks because we were a little communication issue. But I'm 1, Alex is 2, Justin is 3, Griffin is 4, Willie is 5. So he's on the precipice. Salerno's next, and then you are up.
Where's Adam Hill on this?
Adam Hill was disinvited. He was uninvited from the get-go. Griffin, you were on those shows, right? Or were you out that week?
I might have been out that week. I don't remember Adam Hill in the Circa conversation.
He's got a long history of kind of ruining any sort of contest and picks contest. That
does
we want to do.
Win a lot? Is that why?
No, we want to win. This is for real money. No,
so
we want to
win.
No, I don't believe that he would get us the picks in time each week.
Okay, makes sense.
He's on the road a lot. He doesn't answer text sometimes. He's a very busy man.
Okay, valid.
So his position is to grade our picks. So he gets to shred us, you know, the next week or help us with some advice the week of making the picks.
Got it.
So
these are the picks for. Right now.
We have not decided the picks yet because what I put in our rundown was early leans and likes. These are games I'm considering. I'm not suggesting anyone else consider them.
Okay.
So I'm looking at Colts -1 against the Bears. And again, I'm going on yesterday's lines. The lines actually get set tomorrow at 10 a.m. Then they're locked in. Whatever they are tomorrow, and they could be slightly off. You know, last week, like the Packers line was well, you know, it turned out to be not the right line because, you know, they got the job done, but there was a possibility that Jordan Love could come back. So I was like, ooh, that 2.5 I put, you know, took with Jordan Love. Anyway, I'm thinking Colts over Bears, Eagles +0 against the Saints, Titans over Packers, Cowboys over the Ravens, and the Rams over the Niners. The Rams thing is starting to leak oil because it's getting pretty crazy.
Wait, let's go back. Yeah. Cowboys over the Ravens.
I'm going to consider it.
Why?
Because I think the Ravens have serious, serious, serious issues with their pass defense. And while the Ravens are pissed and motivated, the Cowboys got freaking lit up last week. And I can see Dak.
And the Ravens are down too already.
I know.
There's no way they're going to be down three.
Don't ever say that in sports gambling. Mm-hmm. Don't ever say that.
I'm about to put money on this, and I don't even bet. There's no way.
Do you think the Ravens will go in and beat the Cowboys?
I think that the Ravens are going to go in and beat the Cowboys. They're already the talk of town, the talk of the world, because they're down two. And really, they shouldn't even have let that game slide against the Raiders. My Raiders, right? But our defense came through like they always do.
Well, the Ravens' back end is not playing well. Now, I trust that they're going to fix it. Their offense is awesome. I mean, the real play here, and I mean, that's doable. Outside of Circa Millions might be the over. It's 48.5. I mean, I could see this game with both teams in the 20s.
You didn't even put the Raiders in this. Come on now.
Well, because I don't want to pick the Raiders. Depending on what the line is, do you want to lay 5.5 with the Raiders? Do you think they're going to win by a touchdown? Do you think it's going to be comfortable?
Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN, Las Vegas, and ESPN, Reno.
Are you surprised UNLV was not included?
I can't say I'm surprised, because I was pleased with the configuration and actually the metrics. And the metrics spoke to the decision-making process. And they were very, very objective in that sense. So in my mind, I think it was the best four that were selected.
Yes, San Diego State was one of the four. So the pres of San Diego State answering that question from Mark Ziegler. I like that he's the one who delivered it. He got the information, got a good bite. Las Vegans are not happy with that. I'm sure folks in Albuquerque are not happy either that they weren't one of the first schools invited to this new Pac-12. And want to get into what is this Pac-12 and do schools beyond the six want to actually be in. Jeff Grammer has covered this conference for a long time. He's up with Nyshawn Zaragoza and Steve Cofield. What's up, Jeff?
What's going on, guys? How you guys doing?
What's up?
Well, we're doing fine. There are a lot of fans in this market who are very, very salty right now. Give me the vibe in New Mexico about not getting an invite with these first four to go to the six pack.
So, I mean, the initial vibe, I think, is I'm guessing it was there too, just like everywhere else, was just kind of shock. Wow, where did this come from? I know the scheduling, when the football scheduling agreement didn't extend, some people now are kind of revisionist, looking back saying, oh, we saw it coming. I don't think anybody really saw this coming.
Right.
So this caught a lot of people off guard, UNM included. I will point out too that UNM is in a position now where on the Wednesday before the season opening football game, the Lobos did open their football season August 24th in week zero. But the Wednesday of that week, Eddie Nunez took a job as the athletic director at Houston. So UNM is now currently without what was one of the longest tenured and certainly more influential athletic directors in this league. He is the guy that is not only on the Division I men's basketball council, but he is the head of the Division I oversight, the chair right now of the Division I Oversight Committee. I mean, he's sitting in some pretty influential seats around college football, around college athletics right now. And he's also a guy who's had his name thrown out, different levels of probably validity, but had his name thrown out for a lot of jobs over the past 2 years at power conference schools. So they're without an athletic director. This all happens, and people are like, wait, you know, what are we doing here? I will say that while nobody's happy about it, I think there's a little bit more of an understanding here that the market probably isn't as desirable as maybe some other markets could be, and certainly the understanding that football just hasn't held up its end of the bargain for quite a while. And those two things combined with some financial woes and lack of a good football stadium, I think people sort of understand why UNM wasn't one of them, but still also very hopeful that they could become one of them. Because there is one really unique caveat going on in New Mexico right now, which is that there's billions, and I mean that with a B, of dollars in state surplus money in oil reserves. I know people think oil in Texas. Southeast New Mexico has some oil reserve money that the state of New Mexico has an awful lot of. And there's a big push, and has been for a while, to invest a little more in facilities for the two FBS programs in the state of New Mexico, which is both University of New Mexico, which we're talking about now, and then down in Las Cruces, New Mexico State, which is in Conference USA.
So tell me if I'm wrong on this. I think New Mexico and UNLV once again are bonded together, and we talk about the basketball programs needing to do well for the schools to feel good about themselves. What New Mexico and UNLV can sell most is, hey, look at what we have been at times and then what we can become. Like, the hope is what you have to sell this six-pack.
Absolutely. And first of all, you know, some other things for Albuquerque. You guys know the bullet points on the resume for UNLV better than I, for certain. But what Albuquerque also has going for it now that isn't unlike, I think, UNLV in a lot of ways, is the community, the city right now has some investment going on. I know people may have an outside opinion of Albuquerque, but Netflix is now based, one of its major U.S. hubs is based here. They just filmed the LeBron James Rez Ball movie here in the pit, in fact. There's filming going on. Hollywood movies are being filmed here all the time. There is a big Amazon push out here in Albuquerque. Facebook has a headquarters here. There is a lot of growth in the Albuquerque area specifically, and that is something that's new to this market in terms of college athletics. What I mean by that is this is a very poor state, one of the poorest in the country, and tapping into fundraising dollars has always been very difficult for the University of New Mexico. You got to find the mom and pop plumbing company, the longtime local restaurant, and get them to donate. Well, there's a cap on that kind of stuff. New Mexico and Albuquerque specifically kind of has some major corporations now that if they want to make this kind of a home base for them, there might be some corporate dollars that are becoming available that you can tap into for fundraising. And like I said, the oil money is another option to try and catch UNM up funding-wise to the conference, to the rest of the conference in terms of facilities. So there are some interesting potential kind of nuggets to UNM right now. And basketball obviously is very good. We know basketball isn't driving the bus here, but the basketball can be very good. And as far as football goes, they are 0-3. There is some optimism, as crazy as it sounds, around Bronco Mendenhall. They've played good in all three games and were 2 touchdown underdogs plus in all three games. There were 4 touchdown underdogs in one of them. And they've actually played good into the second half of two of those and led, you know, an FCS power until the final 10 seconds, then lost. So it was an FCS school, but it was Montana State. So there's some rare optimism around football, and there is some reality to there could be some new corporate dollars available for sponsorship and stuff like that here. So there are a couple little feathers in the cap that UNM may have for potential.
Let's look at the four schools leaving. ESPN had a good story the other day, which basically suggested in a lot of ways that whether it was Gloria Navarez who was leading the charge or the president, some of the other presidents, that they tried to bully the Pac-2, and the Pac-2 was like, screw this. We're not paying through the nose. You're not more powerful than we are. We're taking 4 of your schools. We have the money.
It's interesting because the power of the Pac-2 was this war chest they were sitting on, right? They kind of have the money to survive being bullied, if that's what they feel like was happening to them. And they survived that. Well, in surviving that and doing the move they did, I think the Mountain West is now going to be sitting on a little bit of a war chest that kind of helped it survive what's next. I know some people have suggested this could be the end of the Mountain West, right? And it still may end up being that way. If UNLV does end up going to the Pac-12, it's certainly going to be a different Mountain West, or maybe the remaining schools do have to go find somewhere else. But it's interesting that the power of the Pac-2 was that it had all this money that it could kind of weather the storm a little bit, and it found a way to weather that storm and come out on top. Well, now you're talking about what could end up being, if Air Force goes to the AAC or if another school happened to leave, you're talking about $150 million war chest that the Mountain West has. It's never had anything like that. I will give Chris Murray up in Reno a tip of the cap for having this in a mailbag the other day. He actually wrote, and it makes some sense to me, I don't know if the figure is right, but he said, why wouldn't the Mountain West now maybe throw out $10 million, just as a figure, to all the remaining schools right now, just as a sort of a solidarity thing, that and re rewrite your bylaws so the buyout now is so much you cannot, absolutely cannot leave for the next 5 years. That would at least stabilize things through the immediate future, maybe 3 or 4 years at least. And that would include UNLV, Nevada, New Mexico, well, the six existing, or the seven remaining schools, rather. If they sign some sort of pact, the Mountain West certainly has a lot of money coming in. You could give every school $10 million, and every school that's left would take that money pretty quickly.
I got a tweet earlier from Doug, who's been listening to the show for a long time, and he said UNLV wasn't invited because they don't want to spend the money for the buyout. They'd rather wait to make a better deal and hope the Mountain West crumbles. UNLV is cheap. What's wrong with that? I actually, in the people I've talked to, there's a lot of people questioning what this pack, whatever, is going to be. They're probably not going to have an AQ, and that's probably 99% automatic qualifying spot in the playoff. I mean, on paper, some of their ideas look good. I don't know that their TV deal is going to be massive. And by the way, something people forget about, and I guess the four that got invited don't care, haven't gotten pushback yet. These are public institutions for the most part. Money does matter, and spending money does matter. You have to justify why you're spending all this money to go to a new conference that may not be better.
I mean, again, I'm not the first to say this, but it's leaving one group of five to join another group of five is basically what happened, and it's not going to be an automatic qualifier in football. It just isn't. They can float out to The Athletic and Chris Bonini's article, which he's been doing great coverage to. All the national guys, I will say, for the most part, that group of three, four, five national guys that all seem to get the same sourcing within, you know, 10 minutes of each other, a lot of them have been doing good reporting on this. I'll give them credit for that. But what I don't like sometimes is just because a source within the Pac-12 says the TV deal they're hoping for is between $10 and $15 million per school, that doesn't mean it's true. That means somebody is floating that idea out there and it's being reported. Doesn't make the reporting on it inaccurate. But if they get a $10 to $15 million, if they get a $15 million TV deal, of course Memphis and Tulane should go join them and these other schools should join them. But it doesn't make it so just because it's in an article. It hasn't gone to market yet, so we don't know what those numbers will be.
Well, the other part of it is I think they were all really poorly sourced on the story of Nevada and UNLV being tied together. It's not the case. It's not true. It doesn't matter what the regions think. And really, it looks like they sourced one region who said that. Now, listen, I think it's a novel idea that both of the Nevada schools should go to the Pac-12, but it is far from a certainty that one is going to drag the other down.
The notion that you would hold one back in any way from bettering itself because the other one isn't also invited is sort of absurd when you think about it. You would want the best for your school if you're a Board of Regents. That's your obligation as a Board of Regents. You want what's best for both schools, but that doesn't mean hold one back so the other doesn't get left behind. It means get the best you can for either school and then see what you can do for the other. That's what that means. And it's just that part of it was sort of absurd and remains so. I will say this, and again, this is something you know better than I. The stadium situation, a lot of people wondering why UNLV hasn't already been included, and myself included a little bit. Like, I'm a little curious why, but I will say that some people think that the stadium with the Allegiant Stadium, man, that's a great stadium. You get a lot of games there. I've been told that maybe there are some issues with how much use and how much cost it could be. UNLV to use Allegiant Stadium on any sort of regular basis, that it wasn't exactly viewed as much of an asset in all this as you would think. Because if you look at Colorado State, new stadium, San Diego State, new stadium, Snapdragon Stadium, Fresno State, decent stadium, and then who am I forgetting the other one? Boise State, obviously. They put a lot of millions of dollars of renovations into Albertson Stadium through the years. Well, obviously, Allegiant's great, but how much ownership does UNLV really have of it?
Right.
Is what somebody told me might be a big question.
Interesting. I got like 10 seconds left. New Mexico conference-wise, 5 years from now, where are they?
Mountain West. I think in some iteration, the Mountain West will survive, and UNM will be there. I don't know who else will be there.
Jeff, you're the best, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
There he is, Jeff Grammer, one of the top writers around the Mountain West Conference, been covering it for a while. Wanted to do some New Mexico Lobo basketball talk, but didn't get to it. Mountain West Conference Media Day for basketball. Actually going down on October 16th and 17th, so we're efforting to be on the scene there. We will be on the scene there. 5 o'clock hours on the way. We'll check in with another UNLV angle as Kevin Kruger, Run Rebels head coach, will be on Cofield and Company.